This is Graham Joffe with SportsFire.
Turning our attentions now to rugby, and boy, Bryce Lawrence must be feeling the love this week. It hasn't stopped, from the emails, jokes, cartoons and t-shirts. And I was just looking, thousands of South Africans are still flooding that online petition to have the referee banned from rugby following that performance in Australia's 11-9 quarterfinal win over the Box. And the petition to stop Bryce Lawrence even reffing a rugby game again, making plenty of news in World Cup host nation New Zealand. More than 67,000 Facebook users have now confirmed this morning that they liked the site, and basically putting their name behind a petition to stop Bryce Lawrence from ever reffing a rugby game again. And you know, there's so much mixed opinion. You speak to so many different people, still about the game, and you know, the fact that I watched the game again last night, and I can't believe South Africa still lost the game. But it's just a lot of people believe that it's time. You know, the Box had so much possession, even without the ref, they should have definitely have won that game comfortably. And it's just the fact that Bryce Lawrence did have such a bad game that everyone believes he was the sole reason why the Box ended up losing to the Wallabies. Time now to catch up with our SportsFire rugby analyst Dan Retift. Dan Retift, this World Rugby Update is brought to you by First Cut, a leading South African distributor of capital equipment and consumables in partnership with Kaltenbach. First Cut is the exclusive South African supplier of Kaltenbach circular and band sawing machines, sectional steel and sheet metal processing systems, punching and shearing machines, and shot blast and painting systems. For metal processing solutions, visit www.firstcut.co.za. Dan Retief, our SportsFire rugby analyst, obviously having a little bit of a break now that it's come to the semi-final stage of the World Cup. Dan, good evening to you.
Yes, hi Joffers. I heard you talking about Bryce Lawrence. You know, there are other factors to Bryce Lawrence. If you recall, he also had a very poor game when the Sharks played the Crusaders in the semi-final of Super Rugby. And then we were all quite shocked that he was given the final of Super Rugby. And he didn't perform particularly well that day, if I recall. The Kiwis were a little bit upset by some of the rulings that went against the Crusaders, you know, when the Reds won the Super Tournament. So it is strange that a referee that has now got quite a bad track record actually gave that game, and that a top official can completely change the way the law is applied and nothing seems to happen. You know, I mean, surely there should be at least a press release or an announcement from Paddy O'Brien, who's in charge of the World Referee, saying that they've looked at the tape of the game and they will be addressing it with Mr. Lawrence. You know, yeah. I think the fans deserve a little bit better than what's going on. You know, to have a game so badly refereed and they just do nothing about it. You know, I think it detracts from the tournament. It in fact cheapens the tournament.
Well, probably the IRB have probably looked at the tape, and Bryce Lawrence will get the final.
Don't be surprised, you know, but I'm just astonished that, you know, an official can absolutely change the way the law is blown, and they don't react to it at all, you know, and I'm talking about the breakdown. You know, that said, I mean, there were some things that the Wallabies could complain about as well. For instance, when they scored their try and J.P. Peterson charged the kick by James O'Connor, and O'Connor hadn't yet advanced to kick the ball, and JP ran right up to him. O'Connor then missed that kick. Sure. And in fact, the law states that the kick should have been retaken. You know, so there's another mistake. You know, and it's happening in the quarterfinal of a Rugby World Cup. You know, so I was very disappointed. The touch judges, for instance, intervened in that game in crucial ways. The one was the winning kick, the other one was a forward pass that wasn't, but yet they don't intervene on incidents of foul play. For instance, when Dan Bickerman shoulder-charged Heinrich Brousseau, which was an almost identical situation to when Buckets Boeta went into Adam Jones in the Lions series in 2009, and Buckets was cited and banned for 2 weeks. You recall that was the test match where the Springboks turned up with a ban saying for in solidarity with Buckets. And what happened, because the players were so frustrated, but South Africa was then wrapped over the knuckles for having been naughty boys.
Right, Dan, let's talk. The line's not too good at the moment, but I just want to talk about the Bok coaching job now. A lot of speculation.
Yeah, they're all over, you know, and I think it always happens with this kind of thing. You know, I remember Jake White saying that his name has been attached to every coaching job available in the world, you know. And I think what's happening with the Springbok coaching job is that every possible name has now been put forward as to who could be the Springbok coach and who it should be. SA Rugby, Yuri Roo is still overseas, and he's not really responding and setting out exactly what's going to happen. And I noticed they add to their press release that they don't really want to talk about it anymore. I think there's still a lot of questions to be answered. You know, what is the process going to be? Is there a transformation imperative? Must it be a black Springbok coach? Can a foreigner be a Springbok coach? You know, all those questions need to be answered. But all the names are in a hat, and I just wish that they maybe spread their net a little wider and they bring in a committee consisting of some coaches, some senior players, some senior press people, to maybe come up with a blueprint of who and what the coach should be. And then my hope for the coach is that whoever we appoint now must be somebody who has great planning skills, is very good with youngsters, and we need to now put in place Project 2015, which ends at London with the Springboks winning the Rugby World Cup back, you know, and that's the kind of person that we need to put in charge, you know, and we really cannot make the mistake again that was made with Peter de Villiers when we put somebody into a job that he just didn't cope with very well. He didn't handle the pressures very well, and it was actually in many instances quite unfair that somebody is dumped in the fishbowl and told to swim, you know. And so I suppose with Yuri Roo being away and they're saying they're going to do it over the next 2 months and then they're going to announce it, I suppose that is not too bad because it means they're not rushing into the job.
Sure. I see a story today about John Kerwin, that his tenure as Japanese coach is coming to end. That might be a good position for Peter de Villiers because there'll be no language barrier because often it sounds like Japanese when he's talking.
Yes, yeah. You know, people have accused me on occasion of being quite harsh on Peter de Villiers. And you know that whenever I've talked about the coaches, I also include the others, Dick Muir and Gary Gold. And my impression of going out in the quarterfinal is that in a month's time, we're not going to be sort of saying, look, the guys tried their best. They were crooked by the referee. We're going to have to analyze the Rugby World Cup and say what happened. And we're going to have to be truthful and say we went out in the quarterfinal, which equals our previous worst performance in the Rugby World Cup. You're not going to be able to alter that, you know. So it's all very well that the golden generation moves on and you don't want to put the boot in when the guys have really given their all and they're feeling shattered. And I agree with that. I was shattered. I didn't know how we lost that game. But the reality is we lost in the quarterfinals, you know. So the side that Peter de Villiers put staked everything on, the players who were empowered to be there, they didn't finally produce it, you know, and that's what will be remembered. It's sad, but that's what will be remembered.
Let's look ahead to the semis this weekend. Saturday, 10 a.m. South African time, Wales against France. I think quite a big blow for the Welsh. Rhys Priestland, he's been brilliant at number 10, but obviously a worthy replacement in James Hook.
Yeah, very attacking player, James Hook, and, you know, he's gone up a level. Other than I really like Rhys Priestland. I think he was obviously Wales's find of the tournament because he was the one new face in that side that was really performing, you know. But they are playing a very attacking game. They're playing very confidently and they're lucky that they have a player like Hook. And it is interesting that that they don't go back to their previous fly-off, you know, Stephen Jones, who's the better goal kicker, you know. So, and goal kicking might prove vital in a knockout game. So Wales against France, I mean, it's a fascinating game. My view is that Wales seem to have all the energy. They're the exciting side there. Other than I've watched the Wales quite a bit, and to my mind, they defend illegally. They defend offsides, but they do it en masse. But they are definitely, most of the time, a metre ahead of the line, and they haven't been pulled up, and they could be pulled up in a game like this, and that could throw them offline. Their young captain, Sam Warburton, you know, they're now talking about him as being as good a fixture as Pocock, as Heinrich Brousseau. I thought he's been pretty illegal as well. He's been very good at hitting in the side. And I picked up with Wales too that they drive across in the rucks and sort of seal the ball. And look, it's my favorite drum at the moment. You know, will the referee allow them to play like that? France, I've been reading on the web, they say that they stage a revolution. The French are very good at having revolutions.
Yes, they are.
This is a player power one. They've sort of grabbed back the responsibility and they're playing the way that they like. And Marc Livremont has been sort of moved aside. And I must say, France, for periods of the game against England, were utterly superb. You know, I mean, big, strong pack, the best scrummaging side there probably, but very mobile, and they always have flair and finesse when they play properly, you know. So I think that's going to be a tremendous clash, with Wales obviously trying to play very quickly to take the ball away from the bigger pack, you know. So it's certainly going to be cut and thrust and go right down to the wire. Mm. And it might actually hinge on goal kicking.
Yep, and then Sunday, New Zealand against Australia, 10 a.m. South African time. A lot of nerves jingling around New Zealand quarters with Richie McCaw supposedly not training yesterday, but look, from all quarters, it looks like he will be fit to play on Sunday.
Yeah, I think Richie McCaw would play in this game if he had his foot in a leg brace, you know, because it seems, you know, he has had a very difficult season. He's battled, he's been in and out of Super Rugby, he's been in and out of the All Blacks. But he's key to their game, you know, and you just wonder whether they're making a mistake, whether they wouldn't be better off playing a fully fit player and giving Richie McCaw that if they get through to play the final. But obviously, they understand that you can't think of the final now, you're in the semi-final, and the first job is to win the semi-final. And losing Dan Carter. But I have a feeling, you know, that the Wallabies are still going to be feeling a bit sore and a bit battered from the Springbok game, which was a really tough game. And it might well be that the Springboks beat Wallabies for the All Blacks. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if that's how it goes.
Right, let's quickly look ahead to the Curry Cup weekend. One thing we know for sure, the Lions have got a home semi-final. The Cheetahs and Sharks are going to battle out for that second home semi-final. I guess the big thing is the Blue Bulls against the Leopards. The Bulls on Friday night, they have to get 5 points, but that may still not be enough because Western Province basically just have to beat the Pumas at Newlands to secure that fourth semi-final spot.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting weekend because the Bulls play first, you know. So every step of the way, everybody's going to know what they have to do. So the Bulls have no choice. They've got to go and get the four try, get the bonus point, and then they've got to sit back and see what happens to the game above them, you know, when Western Province and Cheetahs sort of fight out their games. So it's not in their own hands. And equally, you know, a team like Western Province, who are playing the Pumas, they will go all out for 5 points as well, you know. Because they understand that if they're going to get into the playoffs, that's what they have to do. Griqua's not out of the equation, but you know, they're playing the Cheetahs, a much harder game. The Cheetahs, in their turn, who play Griqua's, they're trying to move up into second place, while keeping an eye on the Sharks and the Golden Lions at Kings Park, which is the last game of the weekend. You know, so, and that, funny enough, has quite a lot to be played for in that game, because the Lions, we now know, can't be knocked off their perch. And I apologise to the listeners, because last weekend I hadn't added the 2 points that they got for that draw. So I made it sound as though they could still be overtaken, but they cannot be overtaken. But the Sharks have taken the one on board. They know that they want to win that game because they want to clinch second place so that they can get a home semi-final, which is important on all kinds of levels. And I noticed the Sharks, they put Patrick Lambie back to play fullback, and then Bismarck Duplessis, Yanni Duplessis, Willem Alberts, you know, coming back from the Springboks, JP Peterson, they're on the bench. So I think it's a no-nonsense sort of situation for John Plumtree. He actually wants to win it. You know, the Lions have done exactly the opposite. They've rested a lot of players. And it's come at quite a good time for John Mitchell that the reward of topping the log means he can give the rest of his squad a game and start preparing them for the semifinals and the final. You know, so it's worked out fantastically for the Lions. And it goes to what we've said all season, that there's so much to play for, to top a log. Because it gives you these benefits at the end when you start getting into the playoff games.
Dan Retief, our SportsFire rugby analyst, thanks very much. We'll chat to you again on Monday.
Super, Joffers. I look forward to that. And you didn't do what you normally do. Make me call the semi-finals in the Rugby World Cup.
Call it.
I'm saying France-New Zealand in the final. Okay. A repeat of the first one.
Dan Retief. We'll come back to you on that. Cheers, Danny. Thanks very much, boy. And just before I wrap up on the rugby, I was at the Lions Rugby Awards on Monday night. What a great bunch of guys, those youngsters. And they look so positive and so humble as well. And there was a goosebump moment for me, being a diehard Lions fan. Kobus Kroblaar getting his 100th cap, a standing ovation at the Lions Rugby Awards. What a fantastic servant of the game. And, you know, in these days, to play for one union, 100 games, Kobus Kroblaar. What a great player as well. So well done to all those Lions Awards winners from Monday night. This Rugby World update was brought to you by First Cut, a leading South African distributor of capital equipment and consumables in partnership with Kaltenbach. First Cut is the exclusive South African supplier of Kaltenbach circular and band sawing machines, sectional steel and sheet metal processing systems, punching and shearing machines, and shot blast and painting systems. For metal processing solutions, visit www.firstcut.co.za.